into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Brian O'Driscoll. On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Yeah, very welcome along for the first time in 2021. Brian O'Driscoll is with us, so I guess we should say Happy New Year, Brian.
Yeah, Happy New Year, Nathan. How are you?
What a start to 2021. Well, for you, it has been. Congratulations.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, delighted number three arrived on the 28th of December. So, yeah, it's been... 2021 with a bang, to say the least. He was meant to hang on till January, but he thought he'd give everyone else a fighting chance and give himself a really crap sports birthday. So, there was a few looks at my missus when she was like, I think I'm in labor. I was like, nah, you're fine for another 3 or 4 days.
How is having a newborn baby in the middle of a lockdown?
It's shocking. It's a shock to the system at the best of times. There's obviously really good things about being at home, being able to give it all the time, not having to, constantly feel as though you're on the move. If I ordinarily would be away a lot in January, so Amy would have a huge amount of workload herself. So to be able to share all of that is great. But then at the same time, it becomes Groundhog Day, and particularly with the homeschooling and a newborn, it's challenging. And then throwing some work in there and trying to go and get some exercise, so it's a bit samey at the moment. I'm a bit like everyone else. I'm also doing Dry January, which is has been a little bit of a challenge these first 14 days in.
Wow, this will be one of your greatest achievements, Brian. To go through this January of all Januaries as a Dry January. Wow, well done.
I had a couple of the lads on to me, Shane Horgan and Dennis Higgy. I hope neither of them listen to this, but they were on to me going, what about a drink Zoom on Friday? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, will I tell them or not tell them and just drink like 0.0 from a glass and they'll be none the wiser? And just as the start saying some really stupid and silly and inappropriate things the longer the conversation goes on, to think that the alcohol is taking effect. But I don't know whether that's transpiring now. I think everyone's just fed up with their existence at the moment. That's what it is. It feels like an existence rather than living. So
yeah,
sooner we can get out of this, sooner we can get back to even a level or two below where we are now, just to be able to go out and see the odd person and be able to go over to my parents' house and sit in their front room and drink a cup of coffee with them rather than chat to them at their door. It's impossible not to have it weigh down on you, because it feels like we are really missing out on our normal existence. And whatever about us is, parents in our 40s and young kids growing up, I really feel for the teenagers and the 20-year-olds that are in college, meant to be enjoying the best years of their life, and they're stuck in their bedrooms or stuck in bed sits and not getting an opportunity to meet anyone. So as much as we'll feel sorry for ourselves, there's people worse off than you.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're at the right age and period of life, having a nice distraction of young children and actually not being that bothered about not being able to go out on a Friday, Saturday night. I can't imagine what it will be like being a 24, 25-year-old now and not having coppers open and been stuck in for, 9 months at this stage. Give us the one Brian O'Driscoll tip then for homeschooling.
Try and keep your patience. And
how, Brian?
I find less is more. Do you know what? It's everything is on seesaw now, and you go on there and hoping that your teachers are explaining it well. Obviously, I've got a 7-year-old and a 6-year-old. The 7-year-old almost can get cracking herself. The 6-year-old boy really needs his hand kind of held through everything. He's only in senior infants, so just to try and not lose your cool where they drop their pen like 20 times on the, you know, within 5 minutes, or, you know, the attention span is beyond shocking for your man. So just to try and roll with it. And if you can get something done, brilliant, but not putting a load of pressure on ourselves. So yeah, what are we, four days in? And it's gone okay so far. It's gone okay. I do feel tense though at the end of it. You know, we try and get it done by 11 o'clock where my daughter has her daily Zoom call. My son's abandoned his Zoom call already. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, okay. So we try and just get cracking at 9:30, get an hour and a half done. And then we were going off for runs actually before I had two people quit on me. I went and then I was left to run on my own today and I just pulled my calf. So like this whole lockdown thing and sleep deprivation, it's exacerbating an already bad situation with a torn calf now too.
Well, it all sounds very familiar, Brian. Today I resorted to testing my seven-year-old. He was annoying me so much. Could he name 50 players who have scored in the Premier League so far this season and go up to his room and write them all down and come back when it's done? So that's the level we're at of trying to find distractions.
And I would imagine as a seven-year-old, I remember myself as a seven-year-old, I could have given 150 players. Like they have an insatiable appetite for storing that knowledge, that relatively irrelevant knowledge. You know, 9 plus 9, not so much, but you know, tell me who scored in, you know, who was player of the week back in, you know, the second week of September, and they'll be able to tell you. So my kids are the passing time, I think the big thing is just hanging out and trying to, you know, the big thing I find is compartmentalizing the day to make sure that you're not always doing one thing or when you're working, you're working, and when you're with them, you're with them. And just to make sure that it's good quality. They're pretty resilient. So you just have to kind of roll with it. And I found myself getting an awful lot softer, and the requests that are coming towards me are definitely being facilitated an awful lot more as lockdown's gone on. I think they've just broken me down.
Yeah, you got to give yourself a break as well, I guess, during all this. It's turned into sort of an episode of Dadcast so far, Brian, which is perfectly fine. Just in the general state of flux of the world then, looking at the rugby angle of it, we should be talking about the final two rounds of a already much-changed Champions Cup. That's gone. We're still not 100% sure on the Six Nations and what the French role within that will be. And also, there's huge question marks around the Lions tour. So we really don't know where we are over the next 6 months and what sort of end to the Champions Cup. Does the Six Nations, do the French have to be a part of the Six Nations as a one-off? Do you see any way you could go down to just having the five?
I don't know what the circumstances are with regard to sponsorships, with regard to broadcast rights, with regard to monies being split amongst the relative countries on the contingency that one of the countries pulls out on the basis of one of the sides not being able to play. The important thing, the Six Nations for the home nations and for England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Italy, France is so enormously important to their success and their ability to function. More so obviously in Wales and in Ireland. You look at the RFU as well and how they've been hemorrhaging money, but because they also feed their provincial or regional teams. Whereas the LNR in France is a different entity compared to the FFR, the French Union, and likewise, in England with the clubs and the union too. So it's really precarious times at the moment. I think it was difficult to stomach last year, the no crowds. And I think that's why everyone's found 2021 really hard, because it felt as though the vaccine was on the horizon, and now we feel as though we're back almost worse than we ever were. And from a rugby point of view, still no crowds coming through, still hemorrhaging money, still extra costs on PCR testing, all of those added you know, costs that you wouldn't ordinarily have to compute when you're putting together your P&L, it's just constant bad news. There doesn't seem to be any possible wins. So I'd be interested to see the small print as to, you know, the Six Nations contract, what entitlements each country would get if one country did remove themselves for the year in question.
Yeah. And what about the Lions then? Because you know all about the magic of a Lions tour. And it does feel already like a long shot that South Africa away can happen. There's all this talk about maybe the South Africans come to this part of the world, a test at Crow Park, a test at Twickenham, that they tour the Lions countries. Is that a runner? Is it a needs must? If that's the only way that this can be sustained, you just got to run with it in these exceptional circumstances?
I think you weigh up two things. You weigh up, you know, the appetite that people would have for. So let's take it that it's that the tour is not going to transpire on the basis that it certainly appears that way. You know, the fact that they're needing to come to a decision now at the end of the month, South Africa are in a bad way. You know, this strain that has come from there obviously is very worrying. They don't have a grasp of their statistics no less than, you know, we do here. So it feels as though it's inevitable that we're going to look at very best a postponement of the tour. All the alternative of this 3 or 4 test tour back in the UK and Ireland. So would there be an appetite for those games to be played from a broadcast or from a spectator point of view? 100%. Of course there would, because some rugby is better than no rugby, but then you have to balance it off to the actual story of the Lions. And are you, you know, I wouldn't say I often agree with Stephen Jones, but I read his article at the weekend and I think he was spot on. I think you can't look at short-term gain just from a monetary point of view if there's a negative impact on the brand of Lions going forward. And if you're starting to look for quick fixes rather than think what the entity of the Lions is all about, I think you're in a dangerous place. And for me, it's easy to say because I'm you know, no longer a player, but for me, it's all about the touring part of it. It's about fans uniting for a 7-week period when ordinarily they're at loggerheads with one another and they're in direct competition. But, you know, somehow then, you know, as an Irishman, you're able to laud and love a Welshman or an Englishman when in no other world you would do that. So I think you've got to protect that entity and the specialness of that. You think about, I think back to the Lions tours, traveling and the experiences and the legacy left behind as well. There's none of that for this tour. This is just, it'll just be a financial piece. Mm. And if we start going there, I think you have the ability, which where people are already trying to lose the Lions. I think the players are the ones that are holding on to it as much as they possibly can. But if you give them more of a reason to make it, less relevant, I think that this tour in Ireland and the UK has the capabilities of doing that.
So if you open the door to holding tests here, you have the owners of the English clubs looking at it and saying, well, if it worked 4 years ago, why can't it work again?
Exactly. And listen, I remember the test match against Australia back in Argentina back in 2005, played in the Millennium Stadium. Like, that's not Lions rugby, to be honest with you. I'm not a fan of that. Yeah, the Barbarians en route in 2013 in Hong Kong. At least it's out of the UK and Ireland. But I have to say, for me, Lions is about touring. It's about going to one of the big three and doing something that on paper does not make any sense. Certainly in the modern game, it doesn't make sense to try and have a cohesive unit within a 4-week period to play your first test match, where guys don't know one another really, other than playing against each other and don't know each other personality-wise, but there's this incredible buy-in and it's that special uniqueness that makes it successful. You know, 1 in 3, sometimes 2 in 3. So I just feel you have to be very, very careful that you don't undermine the core values of what the Lions is all about. Because like I said, there's people there sharpening their knives, ready to cut it loose. And as a player that was on a few Lions tours, it's some of the most special rugby that you'll ever be involved in. To have four nations cheer you on and get to experience Lions training, let alone matches, Lions training every day is spectacular. And the skill level that you see and the rugby IP and the tricks and trinkets that you pick up and come back from Lions tour with, it completely reshapes you as a player. So I think you've got to try and hold on to that as much as you can.
You're going to pick your probable Ireland starting 15 for the opening Six Nations game, which is just around 3 weeks away at this stage. Before we get to that, there's going to be a big change when the players go into camp in a couple of weeks' time, because Paul O'Connell is now officially part of the Irish coaching setup. This day last week, he was appointed as forwards coach, to much surprise for most people. Were you as surprised as everyone else to see this happen?
Yes and no. Like, Paul keeps his cards very close to his chest. I do know that he was unsure. He was testing the water over in Stade Francais a couple of seasons ago to see whether coaching was for him. He wanted a bit of a change up of scenery as well. He was trying to understand the best route into coaching, what was for him. I think he doesn't want necessarily to devote his entire life, that obsessiveness you need to have to be a successful coach, of being 24/7. And I think what this allows him to do is come in for blocks and really give it his all for those periods of time that he's in camp, but then to be able to cast an eye over other games and watch his players, but yet not be, not be laden down with this huge expectation of next game. So I think it does fit what he's looking for. He's had this coaching itch for a while, and I think he's probably been patient and waiting for the right gig, and finally I think it has landed at his feet. Simon Easterby had the unenviable task of trying to do defence and forwards. That looking back is madness, because to try and master one of them is a full time role itself. But to try and do two jobs, that is such a huge ask. So I think it's a great move from Andy Farrell to bring in Paulie, to move Simon completely to defence, where he could solely focus on that. And Paulie being able to come in, one of the world's best line-out operators when he was involved with Munster and Ireland and the Lions. He's got a real penchant for understanding the minutiae of the breakdown, and the excitement that he gets from that, I think, will rub off on the players. Very popular character. So he has all the attributes coming into the environment that will make him a huge success.
And I guess it's a win then for Andy Farrell as well, considering the financial state of the IRFU, where contract negotiations with the players are only opening in the last week or so, that he was able to go and get this reinforcement for the coaching setup that he needed.
Yeah, and obviously I would imagine that they've the realization dawned on them that Simon simply couldn't do the amount of work that was expected of him, and that they needed somebody else in there. And sometimes you don't have to look as far as you think when you're looking for replacements. And sometimes the stars align a bit. Paulie obviously still needed that coaching itch to be scratched, and the role presented itself, and it seems like a perfect marriage. When you know the individual, when you know the work, he's a voracious work ethic. An appetite for getting stuck in. He's got an uncanny ability to be able to, he has a huge amount of knowledge, but also an ability to be able to verbalize what he's trying to get across. So that's why so many of the best coaches are teachers, but Paulie has that ability to be able to get his points succinctly and clearly. So it just feels as though Irish rugby feels very lucky from the outside that we've managed to tease him into the setup that was badly in need of something else.
I thought there for a moment, Brian, when you were saying that sometimes the best option is staring you in the face, that was a come and get me plea.
Roger, isn't Rog the next man to get called in? Although we won't, we're not in a rush to get rid of Mike Catt just yet. But no. I think the point that I make about Paulie having an ability to be able to explain what he means, I think I might struggle with that. As much as I enjoy a little bit of coaching with the TV work, I think. I don't know on field would I be best positioned to be able to get across my point as it is in my head. I suppose I've never had to challenge myself with that. Maybe
surely I'd be you did able it to as
adapt
a player.
Into understanding it. Pardon?
Surely you did it as a player in game. You had to figure things out all the time and pass on instructions, and you were a brilliant reader of the game, so there's no reason why you couldn't do it off the pitch.
Yeah, maybe, but I, the thing about it is if I was to get into it, and I'm probably too far removed from the game at this stage, if I was getting into a coaching role, it would be definitely in the way that Paulie's gotten in. I just wouldn't want to be 24/7. I do enjoy some of the other things that I do, working with some of the companies that I work with, working on some of my own stuff. So I would not want to commit 100% of my time to a coaching role, but it's pretty difficult to go, I think I'll do some coaching. I'd like an international job. It's kind of hard to jump there. And I guess ultimately Paulie did a bit of an apprenticeship though as well with the Irish under 20s. And I would imagine that he's been in a lot of dialogue with Andy Farrell over the course of the last 18 months or whatever, 15 months since Andy's taken over. I know that he was in constant communication with Joe Schmidt around a few other things. So he's got a very strong opinion of how he wants things to come across. He's a clever guy and a lot of what he says is quite thought provoking, but I think, you couldn't anticipate there being a better person to bring into an Irish environment.
Yeah. Let's get into your selection. So this isn't what you think Andy Farrell is necessarily going to do. This is what you would do if you got that big gig. If you got the call, Brian, come pick the starting 15 for the Six Nations opener against Wales. Let's start with the pack then. What's your front row?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned, Nathan, that you're going to be like, I think it's a bit of a snore fest team. I when I wrote it down last night and sent it over to JP, the producer, I did send it with the caveat that I would anticipate that there aren't going to be that many shocks from and oohs and ahs from people that hear it. It on the basis that the guys that I'm picking, obviously a number of them I've played with or I've trained with, but also I don't think there's been that much of a standout performer since we saw the internationals back in November. And albeit it was pretty patchy, some of the performance, some good stuff at times against France and Wales, and then a kind of a real regression in the game against Georgia, but then finishing with a positive, albeit it wasn't a perfect performance against Scotland. Having looked at all the provincial games, I haven't seen anything that I feel is going to vastly improve the guys that finished up in November. So on the basis of that, my front row, depending on whether Tadhg Furlong is fit or not, I'm going to pick Andrew Porter because I think Tadhg Furlong, it's a bit fanciful to think that he's going to start against Wales. So I'm going to go Andrew Porter, Rob Herring and Cian Healy as my front row because... Cian Healy, I think, picks himself. Dave Kilcoyne, when he comes back from fitness, has the potential to push Cian again. Porter, I thought, was very good. He was one of Ireland's real consistent players, a very important player throughout the end of the Six Nations in November. And then Rob Herring, I think it's a position that we're struggling a little bit in at hooker. I thought that Niall Scannell was going to be the answer a couple of years ago. I thought Kelleher was going to come through and really shine, but no one's really grasped it. And I think there's the capabilities of someone coming in and locking that position down if they show a lot of potential for the club, but then take their opportunity properly internationally.
OTBAM are doing their depth charts at the moment, and Keith Wood was on, and he's picked the same front row and similar concerns about the hooker position that we've known for years that Rory Best was coming to an end, and still we're in this position of not quite knowing in one of the key positions. And is that one of the worries of the last year of some sort of transition, that those key roles at hooker, at scrum half, at out half, where we're looking for backup and for people to really say, I am next in line, that still hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't. And I think particularly if you look at somewhere like hooker, where you know, you lose your best line out operator over the last 6 or 7 years in Devon Toner, you know, who isn't being selected anymore. And then on top of it, you've got, you look at the stats that a huge amount of our scores originate at line out. So if you don't get your line out sorted, you struggle a little bit there. It has a major negative knock on effect or connotations to the overall score line that you are able to build up. So it's definitely a concern. I think Rob Herring, you know, his darts probably have been reasonably good. Even when we kind of muddled up a few lineouts at different times over the course of November, it felt as though, you know, it certainly wasn't his throwing that was the only times that we missed, that there was some kind of misreads and you know, missed lifts. But I think you need a dynamic ball carrier at hooker. You know, you really do. You need someone that's going to, you know, give you advantage line as well. And I just feel as though he's a little bit on the lightweight side of things. I'm not sure what sort of scrummager he is. I think he can hold his own, but I don't think he's going to be a destructive scrummager. So, yeah, I do think that I thought Kelleher was going to be the answer, but for some reason he's just not progressed from the potential he showed in his first 6 or 9 months in the Leinster setup.
Mm. And I guess whoever it is, you've got to hope and assume with the introduction of Paul O'Connell to the coaching staff, there's going to be improvements to the line-out in general, and hopefully one of those benefits from that. On the line-out then, and the second row, who are your two selections there?
James Ryan obviously is going to be there for a long time, provided he can stay fit. He's probably potentially number one on the team sheet. So who's with him?
Tyg Byrne,
I'm going to go for at the moment. Ian Henderson has come in and out, and sometimes he has brilliant games for Ireland and then he plays well for Ulster and then he goes quiet for a while, or he gets injured and he's been suspended. It just feels as though he hasn't properly grasped the other second row berth. And just watching Tyg Byrne a little bit, I think, again, he's probably a little bit lightweight for international rugby, but particularly the Welsh game, I like seeing him play against Welsh opposition, because he played in the Scarlets, because he's got such a big reputation over there. They were really sorry to lose him to Munster. They rate him incredibly highly. And I just think he's been very good for Munster. Obviously, we know about his ability to turn over ball, but I think he's improved his work rate, which at times has held him back a bit. He kind of dips in and out of games. But I think on the basis of what we've seen so far, he is worthy of partnering James Ryan in the second row.
And it looks as though as well he has a coach now in Andy Farrell who trusts him, because when he made that breakthrough with Scarlets before the return to Munster, he was getting minutes here and there with Joe Schmidt, but there was no real consistency of selection, where actually you look at those autumn fixtures, he was pretty much a mainstay of that side, got a lot of game time under Farrell, which obviously changes his confidence levels now in a green jersey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if he got on great with Joe Schmidt. I don't know whether there was a bit of a personality clash there. And sometimes with some coaches, if you do something to dirty your bib, if there's a one-off incident, or they do see you in a game, or you do something that is just not part of their checklist, I think it's hard to undo those wrongs. And I can think of kind of different coaches over the years. Jordan Murphy was the obvious one for Eddie O'Sullivan years ago. He missed a tackle against France a good few years ago, back in 2007. And I don't think Eddie ever properly, had the full trust in him thereafter. And potentially you look at the quality of Jordy, should he have had more than 50 caps? Probably. But it was just because himself and Eddie didn't see eye to eye. And I think there's definitely that in all team environments, the coaches have favourites, they have go-to guys, and I feel as though Joe just didn't feel as though Tyg Byrne was a go-to guy for him that he could 100% trust. I think you're right. I think Andy Farrell has a lot more faith in him, and for a position that I thought we felt a couple of years ago, we were really in in a strong place, all of a sudden we look a little bit lightweight there. And I think the emergence of Ryan Baird coming through now in the next six to 12 months, I think you'll see him partnering James Ryan undoubtedly.
That is a 6 to 9 month thing though. You don't think it's now, and maybe that sums up Ireland's whole approach to this Six Nations. It doesn't feel as though this is a transitionary Six Nations in any way, that this is a Six Nations Ireland need to go and win as many games as possible. It's not really about experimentation.
No, it's not about experiment. It's both. It's always both. It's always trying to bring through, particularly this early in the cycle of a World Cup. You've got to think a bit more about performances and results the later the four-year cycle goes. But early on, the first couple of years, I think it gives you an opportunity to invest in some players that you feel are going to be there at that next World Cup, but at the same time be mindful of making sure that your job is secure as head coach and that you're not on a losing streak. You look at someone like Wayne Pivac, you know, they're sharpening the knives over in Wales already, and yet he could do no wrong in Scarlets. So I do think that you have to be mindful of both. I think Ryan Baird was going to be capped in November before he picked up his groin injury, which is very unfortunate, but He will probably get capped, within this year, but I just don't know if he's ready to be a starter. I think you have to earn your crust a little bit more, albeit he shows massive potential. I think he probably just needs a little bit of hardening up at provincial level before he's, you know, kind of catapulted into being a regular starter in the Irish team. And sometimes you have to be not wrap these guys in cotton wool, but you just have to be a little bit mindful, particularly if he's just come off the back of an injury, to kind of give them the confidence to get back playing provincially well, and then the next step will be an easy evolution into the national team.
What about the back row then, which is usually one of those areas where there is a lot of depth? What three have you gone for?
Well, you know, we're all waiting for Dan Levy to get back to full fitness, aren't we? And I think you're probably looking at the guts of a year from when he started back again, to get his confidence up, to get his fitness levels back up, to kind of get rid of any of those shackles that he's carrying from that horrendous injury that he picked up against Ulster in the quarterfinal of the Champions Cup. You know, it feels as though he's kind of the missing link because of what he was delivering before he got injured with Ireland. And I felt as though we really missed him at the World Cup. You know, the ability to do, he's an all-action seven, isn't he? You know, so a groundhog, but also a ball carrier, you know, clever tackler. He does everything. So, you know, the quicker he can get back and fully fit and showing the potential that he had prior to his injury, I think he will be a shoe-in for seven. But in the interim, I think a move that has worked pretty well. I've always liked Pete as a player, but I never saw him as a seven. But I think he's worked really well as a seven for Munster and for Ireland in those last couple of games. So I think Peter O'Mahony at seven. It's a contract year. It's funny, you know, how many players really, you know, not I think the subconscious, they just raise their game to another level when they know that they're out of contract. And his timing of Zeebo heading to Racing 3 years ago could not have been better, because Munster couldn't lose a second player. And now all of a sudden, again, he's showing the importance to their team. Obviously, they're their leader, but also someone that's back, you know, hitting a lot of really good form. And obviously his line-out option is invaluable, particularly to someone like Paul O'Connell, who's coming into the fold, who's going to have a real focus on line-out. So I'm picking Pete at seven, CJ for his ball carrying at six again, because, I don't think he has a bad game for Ireland. Sometimes he gets worked out by the bigger teams that they're able to manhandle him. But I have seen a bit of an evolution from his game. I've seen him pass the ball a hell of a lot more this year than I have done for the previous five seasons or six seasons with Munster in Ireland. So, you know, there's a progression coming there, and he's definitely going to soften advantage lines by becoming a distributor. But I do think you need someone with his capabilities of getting advantage line and those really hard yards, along with James Ryan. So him at six. And then for me, one of the most exciting prospects in Irish rugby at the moment is Caelan Dorris. I think he again, you know, a different sort of ball carrier, someone that finds soft shoulders, that uses his footwork, but also has a lot of power in the collision zone too, but has the skills to go with it. He does remind me of a Jamie Heaslip of sorts, but I think he's a better ball player than Jamie Heaslip is or was. And I think he is so exciting to watch. He was man of the match a couple of times in November, and rightly so. I just feel as though he's going to be a real star for Ireland for years to come.
Because the first thing when I saw that back row, in my head I'm comparing it to some of the great back rows of the last decade or so, when you're thinking of Heaslip and Sean O'Brien and Stephen Ferris being around, and just the rawness and the doggedness of those kind of players, that it doesn't feel as though that back row and even the options around that, and there's always plenty of options, whether it's Josh van der Fleer coming back into a bit of form, that it doesn't feel like it's quite at that world-class level that it was maybe a while back.
And I don't think it necessarily is. I'm not to talk down the lads that I've mentioned, because I think they're all very fine players. But I think when you're talking about really great back rows, and you think about Heaslip, O'Brien and Ferris, that was a very, very special back row. Three very special individual players. Whereas I think, you know, Pete has these magic moments and has huge impacts. But from a consistency over 80 minutes, does he always perform every single game? I mightn't say quite as much as someone like Sean O'Brien. And then CJ, you know, again, he's not done anything wrong, but he doesn't have that explosiveness of a Stephen Ferris. So it's easy to compare a really great back row, but these guys have also won it all. They've also, besides Doris, you know, Pete and CJ have been there for the Grand Slam, for beating the All Blacks. Pete was man of the match in the All Black game in the Aviva. So he turns up for big moments. But I just don't know if they're quite in the same league as the likes of Shawnee and Ferris when they are at their very best. But there's not much in it. I think we can kind of complicate things and over dramatize the discrepancies between them. I don't think it's as vast as some people make out. And I still think that's a good back row, albeit you compare it to an English back row of Unapola, Underhill and Curry. You know, when they're playing really well, I think they're a stronger back row, but you're going to have that international rugby, aren't you?
Let's move on then to the halfbacks. And is we touched on it already. Is maybe the concern that it's so straightforward, you don't need to give this a second thought. It is still Murray and Sexton.
It is. They're the best two players in their positions in Ireland still. And, you know, I watch and try and be as critical as I possibly can in my head to understand their performances, but it's their ability to make things happen and to keep the game plan working when things start going awry. I think that's where they differentiate themselves. And lots of players can have good one-off performances, but there's a calmness and a consistency to both of them. And certainly in Johnny's case, you know, we're crying out for another number 10 to emerge and kind of really put pressure on him. And Joey Carberry, we thought, was the answer to that. And I'm not sure. He's certainly, it's not a like-for-like type, 10 operating there with Joey and Johnny. But with Johnny, his ability to pick the right pass is very, very special. And until he's gone, until we see that next player come through, we have been poxed with Humphreys, with Raj and with Sexton over the last 17 years, 18 years. The quality of those players, even longer. I started playing with David Humphreys back in 2000. So the quality of those three out halves is very special. And I think it's a lofty standard to get to for the next player. Mm. And I think sometimes you don't fully appreciate players until they're gone. And I think that will be the case in these latter years with Johnny Sexton. We know about the brilliant years, but even now he's consistently so good at making good decisions. And people calling for Jack Carthy to come in and, you know, the heir to the throne, I don't see Jack Carthy being on the same page or the same quality of as Johnny Sexton. I just don't see it. I think he has those brilliant moments, but I think internationally, again, that's another situation where he you know, had his chance in the World Cup and it didn't transpire, and that's left an indelible mark with the likes of Andy Farrell. So for me, it's an easy selection of Johnny and Connor, and people will go, what about John Cooney? You know, where is he playing really well again? There must be something up in camp, or be it personality wise, or be it not being able to show the right thing at training, or be able to do what Andy Farrell wants to do. Because we're obviously watching some good John Cooney performances, but there's something there that we don't fully know and can't make a proper decision on, because we don't have that intel. And I guess maybe one day when Andy Farrell is finished with the Irish job, he'd be able to inform us as to what the missing link with John Cooney is.
I'm sure you saw that as well during your playing days, where there was excitement in the media about a player who's shooting the lights out in the Pro 14. And when they come into camp as players, you're probably excited to see what they're about as well. And then that little step up to international level isn't always there for everybody.
It's and you do really need to train with someone, and that's why being an analyst or being a pundit is sometimes difficult, because with new guys, you can watch them in games, but then to get a full appreciation for someone, you need to be able to see them train and to see their intellect, their ability to be able to you know, to read different situations with minimal time. And I think, you know, some players like Jacob Stockdale is a good example of that. I think you can see the athlete, but I think sometimes the decision making hasn't been second nature to him. I think it's something that he's had to really work on. But yet the quality of the athlete is so great, that's what's kept him in there. But there's definitely been other guys that you've thought, wow, this guy looks fantastic, and he comes in and he just doesn't get something, or it takes too long to drill something into to understand how the unit works or what the defensive system is. And sometimes it might be 3, 4, 5 times before he gets it, and you're like, you can't afford to do that internationally. So yeah, there's always going to be those guys, and that's why sometimes I'm enviable. I wish I could be, you know, there to see the quality in training, because you can also see the body language with the great players. You know, they're a bit like a quarterback and their wide receivers. They're go-to players for the likes of Sexton and Murray. On the flip side to that, someone like Keith Earls, right? People couldn't understand how Keith Earls was making the team, but he used to make a show of us at training when he'd be on the opposition before he started breaking through into the team. And that's why I've always been a big fan of him. I definitely feel as though the starting halfback pairing, as much as people will guffaw at it, is definitely Sexton Murray.
The starting centre pairing, then, it's an interchangeable lot, because somebody always seems to be injured. At the moment, Gary Ringrose is still out with the jaw problem, but there's an expectation maybe he might be able to get some game time against Munster in a couple of weeks. And if he does, you'd expect he's back and available. If they are all fit, who are the two?
Yeah, I think Gary's the obvious choice at 13. I think he brings the best balance, irrespective of who you play at 12. And as much as Chris Farrell's been good enough with Ireland any time that he's come in, I think you play a slightly different game with him. And it definitely becomes more attritional, even though he has nice soft hand. But Gary Ringrose can do some stuff that all the other centres can't do. And that's why, for me, he's the obvious choice at 13 when he's fit. Then at 12, it's almost a shame that Farrell doesn't see himself as a 12 at all, because I feel as though he's not going to get as many caps because Gary Ringrose is there, because whenever he's fit, he'll be selected ahead of him. So maybe Farrell should consider, you know, trying to play a little bit of rugby at 12 and see him as, maybe he does see himself as a viable option there. But in that jersey, I think Robbie Henschel played really well for Leinster the last while he's been. So he's been kind of nominated. He might have gotten a player of the month last month. He's been very effective. And as much as I haven't seen a huge amount of Connacht, just haven't seen as much written or spoken about Bundy. So for me at the moment, it's always the close run thing with Bundy and Robbie Henshaw. So I would just think that Robbie's done enough to get back into the starting 15.
To wrap it up then, the back three, there's again plenty of options there and plenty of players who can play in multiple positions. What would you go at right now?
I'm going to start a full back, and I think I want stability there and certainty, and I think Hugo Keenan offers that. He's been selected there ahead of Jordan Larmour the beginning of this season before Jordan got injured. It feels as though he's Leinster's number one fullback, and I think ultimately he'll be Ireland's number one fullback unless Shane Daly can come in and displace him. He looks as though he's someone that kind of fits that mold as well, but is exciting, is an exciting attacker as well. So I guess I want to see more from Shane Daly. His ability to play on the wing and fullback as well, looks as though it's pretty seamless. I don't love Jacob Stockdale at fullback. I think he can have his moments, but I think he's a player that thrives on confidence, scoring tries, and he will score more tries for Ireland on the wing than he will at fullback. And I think you just need to get him the opportunity one-on-one to beat players, because that's where he becomes a world-class operator. I think he's got some flaws in the rest of his game, but he's able to paint over them because of what he's capable of doing one-on-one with players, with opposition. The strength and power, but also even the chip and chase, and his ability to beat players. And if he can, even his distribution in the Georgian match, one of the passes will call forward, but really good quality passing. So he's got that in his game too. I just feel as though get him back on the wing where he built his confidence, built his career initially. So I think that's where he will be at his most prolific.
So you've gone with Stockdale and Earls as...
And Earlsy, yeah. James Lowe obviously will come back into the mix. He had a really good debut. And I think he will be in there. I don't know who he's going to displace yet. But for me, I think Heath Earls is our number one winger, to be honest with you. I think he's in ahead of Jacob Stockdale from a consistency point of view. I think what he offers going forward is this electrifying speed, brilliant footwork, but I think he understands defence way more than all the other back three players that we have, understanding when to play high, but also watching body language of the opposition out half and scrum half to preempt when the ball is going to be kicked and to find himself in the right space and protect his fullback. So I think Keith Earls, even though he's starting to push on now, doesn't look as though he's lost any pace. And his very low error count, and looks as though he's going to create something every time he gets the ball, provided he gets it in space. And sometimes when he doesn't even get it in space, I think he still has the capabilities of beating players one-on-one. But his overall performance, good in the air, really worked hard on his kicking game. I really like Keith Earls, always have liked Keith Earls in Irish teams. And you look at how many tries he scored, 32 or 33 tries. So he knows how to get it done.
So talking about that step up from club to international, what does James Lowe need to do? What's he got to do over the next year, 18 months, to ensure that he's getting into that starting 15?
Well, I think, there was times that you look at some of the work rate, particularly from that Johnny May try. I think, he could have worked a lot harder, a lot earlier. And those moments that it won't just happen for you internationally. I think you've got to make it happen. And it's what he's been able to do at a provincial level, particularly Pro 14, but also in Europe. He's not going to be able to get as much access to playing that type of game internationally. There simply isn't that space. The hits are bigger. The speed is quicker. Time on the ball is less. So I think he's going to have to sharpen all aspects of his game. Yes, he offers something that nobody else does, and that's what makes him a great tool to have. But I think, the graft and the expectation of working with his pendulum and working for the team when, particularly you're not on the front foot, as we weren't against England, I think, when things are going badly, you still have to, put your hand up and deliver yourself, even in a losing team. And I just don't think that did wonders for, for the thought process as to where he ultimately is at. I think he's going to have to earn it a little bit more, but he will get there. He's a very, very exciting player, and he's a guy that you will get people to pay to come and see. And You just need a time. We'll need consistency from him internationally. We saw one really good game and one not so good game against England. So, you know, when the chart starts being progressively positive, I think you'll see him fitting in. And I do ultimately feel as though he will be a starter in the World Cup in 2023. I'm just not sure with who.
Okay. Where's Jordan Larmour in all this?
I think he's, you know, he's touch and go. He's very close with Hugo. Just his timing was unfortunate, wasn't it, with his shoulders. Let's not write Jordan Larmour off. All these players, when we're talking about them, it's not kind of definitive. I think you can fit, you know, Conway in there very easily. You could fit Shane Daly in there, who looks as though all these guys look as though they're good footballers. You know, you could, his time is probably gone, but even Dave Kearney can fit in there. There's not this huge gulf between the first few and everyone else. So I just feel as though right now it's those guys, but you know, all you need is an injury or a dip in form and someone else get their opportunity, and then it's consistency of performance thereafter will keep you in the team. The competition for places is far greater these days than when I played. So you have to constantly be on it and never give up your spot. So it's challenging, you know, to go long periods staying in a jersey, and you really have to be an exceptional player.
Do you see any change in captaincy?
No, not for now. Not for now. No, I don't. I think Johnny's still learning his craft. I think as much as, you know, he was berated. Not, I wouldn't say I berated him, but I was honest and said it wasn't a good look what he did, you know, previously. He's also made some excellent decisions and some really ballsy decisions. Even at the weekend, you know, I was shaking my head in the Leinster game as to why, you know, they're 5 points up, guarantee, you know, the winning of the match with a penalty with 2 minutes to go, but he kicked to the corner. And I would still shake, you know, wonder whether that's a smart move or not, but they got the bonus point try and they got 5 points out of the game versus four. So those small things, sometimes maybe I was thinking, all right, well done, 1-0 Johnny on that, rather than than thinking, I as a captain would have thought, let's win the game. But he kind of thinks bigger picture sometimes as well. And when you go big, sometimes you don't get it, and you'll get a, you know, slap on the wrist for it from people. But I think he's really evolving as a leader. And as much as he's fiery, and we saw that reaction in the French game, that's ultimately what makes him function. And you're going to have to take a little bit of the bad with the really good stuff, because we've been very fortunate to see a lot of good stuff in the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's for sure. Brian, great stuff as always. Thanks a lot for running through that.
Cheers, Nathan.
Go back to one of your many day jobs. Baker, homeschooler, one of them. Good luck.
Talk to you,
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.